Kate tried to convince Utrina to go back to bed, but it was the last week of term and she felt she couldn't afford it. Doggedly, she dealt with the mess she'd made of the wastebasket, showered, dressed, assembled her books, and struck out for her first class of the day. Standing at the window, Kate watched her roommate's pink smudge of hair cross the quad and disappear around the corner of the alumni gym. She shook her head, tisking. It just wouldn't do. She went to Utrina's desk and found a copy of her class schedule, tucked it into the pocket of her own uniform's blazer, and headed for the door. Before she reached it, there came a knock. Kate wondered who could be visiting, finished crossing the room, and opened the door. There was a young man, perhaps a junior or a senior, standing there. Kate didn't recognize him, and felt sure she would, had she seen him before, because he was quite distinctive. Tall and slim, but broad-shouldered for his build, he had a thin, intense face, and long, wavy hair that was a curious shade of dark green. Kate wondered if he might perhaps be a Zardon, but she'd never heard of a Zardon with violet eyes before. His uniform was strange, too. It wasn't the charcoal gray, black, and red of the Worcester Prep male uniform, but rather a much more elaborate, military-looking affair, mostly white, with a lot of gold braid and edging. Or rather, it had been mostly white. This one looked like its owner had been living in it for a while. White uniforms tended to look that way during finals week. It was one of the reasons why the Big W didn't use them. "Who are you?" asked this odd apparition, his voice deep and intense, as though he were barely controlling a fit of some strong emotion. Kate blinked impassively at him. "That's my line," she said blandly. "This is Utena Tenjo's room," said the young man flatly. So you can read, said Kate, who had decided she didn't like him, rather pointedly. He glared at the sign on the door. 412, K. Hutchins, U. Tenjo, enter at own risk. For a moment, then asked Kate harshly, "Where is she?" "Out," Kate replied. "And I'm busy." She collected her walking stick and stepped through the door, forcing him to step back to avoid being bumped, then closed it behind her. Maybe you can try to remember where you left your manners. That said, she stood and looked at him, not aggressively, but steadily, until, with an angry sound, he turned on his heel and stormed off down the hall toward the stairs to the wedge. Having noticed that he seemed to be carrying a sword, of all things, Kate decided she really didn't like him, and was extremely ambivalent about his reasons for wanting to see Utrina. Silently, she went to the stairs at the other end of the hall and left the building directly. She had a number of errands to run today, and now they had been complicated. "Okay, so Kate was right," Utrina observed to herself as she trudged across the suddenly infinite campus. "I'm sick. I've never been so sick in all my life. I have no idea how I got through my afternoon classes. Or in fact, if I actually did get through my afternoon classes. I must have. It's 4:15, and I'm on my way back to the dorm from the Stoddard Labs. My last class is in Stoddard from 3 to 4 on Tuesdays. Is this a Tuesday?" She gave up such a strenuous line of inquiry in favor of just putting one foot in front of the other and not getting hit by a car crossing West Street in the front of Olin Hall. Her head was spinning so violently she felt she must have been lurching around like a drunk, and her legs felt so weak she had no idea how she was managing to make all these steps. While spinning, her head was also pounding, bursts of pain ricocheting from one temple to the other as if she were being repeatedly struck in the sides of the head with an axe. Her lungs felt like they had been poured full of molten lead, which was now starting to congeal. On a sunny but cold December day, she had her tie loosened and her collar open, and sweat was trickling down her back. About the only thing she could say she had going for her was that her stomach had ceased to writhe during the morning's classes. In fact, that was about the only part of her that didn't feel wrong now. Utina would have felt disoriented today even without the flu. The night before she'd slept poorly, probably because of the developing fever, and had been plagued by the strangest, most awfully lurid dreams yet. She couldn't remember much about them, but what she did remember told her that the failure of memory was merciful. It was strange, though. She hadn't dreamed about the people she would have expected. But maybe that was just as well. Despite the way she thought she looked, she wasn't lurching or even moving erratically. To all outside appearances, she looked like a young woman on a mission, striding mercilessly, mechanically, one step after another, toward her goal, eyes locked relentlessly on the way before her, as though concerned about her footing. In the middle of the quad, she ran up against an obstacle somewhat nearer than the horizon. Stumbling back and nearly losing her footing, she looked up to see whom she'd run into. Her eyes focused, slowly and unwillingly, on a face above a blur of white jacket. A hard, narrow face with burning violet eyes, surrounded by a wild tangle of dark green hair. A face which she had seen only the night before in a tangled and violent dream. No, that's impossible. I must be imagining this. I'm sicker than I thought. I'm hallucinating. There was a sudden shattering impact that lifted her right off her feet and deposited her in a heap on the ground, thankfully in the soft snow to the side of the brick-paved walkway, not on the bricks. Her bag landed some distance away, the books cascading out of it. If her head had been spinning and throbbing before, it was about ready to fall off now. Struggling to regain control of herself, Utina half turned, trying to rise, but before she could, a hand tangled itself in the collar of her jacket and hauled her to her feet. "Where is she?" a hard and angry voice demanded, punctuated by another blow that only failed to fell her again because the one hand was still holding her up. "What have you done with her?" Another blow, alternating sides now. "Answer me! Where?" Utina threw all the force of her will against her uncooperative mortal clay, driving her eyes open. The hand twisted deeper into the folds of her jacket, constricting the material against her throat. She looked back along the arm at the face again.
"Sionji,"
she whispered, the crushing heat in her chest and the choking grip on her neck constricting her voice to a bare hiss.
"How? Why?"
"Tell me where Anthy is," Sionji demanded, "or you die."
"I don't know,"
Utina replied, grasping his wrist with both hands and trying to pry his grip loose. A flame of anger flickered somewhere in the back of her mind, but starved for lack of oxygen and went out again as her limbs, already leaden, began to slacken entirely. Her eyes fell closed again.
"Liar!" snarled Sionji, shaking her violently. "Tell me what you've done with her, or by all that's holy, I'll snap your little neck."
No weapon, no strength, no sane enemy to reason with. Utina opened her eyes again and gave him the filthiest look she could muster, knowing it was a poor second for what she'd really like to do to him, and waited for his upraised right hand to strike another blow. Instead, there was a flicker of motion, and something large and heavy struck his left arm. His grip broken, he reeled back, bellowing more in shock and outrage than in pain. Utina, released, crumpled to her knees, coughing so violently she thought she might black out, and struggled to see what had happened. Lying on the ground in front of her was a familiarly battered copy of Sayer and Krunk's Elementary Hyperdimensional Physics. She wanted to gasp, but didn't have the breath for it, and coughed some more instead before sitting back on her heels and taking in the scene before her. Sionji stood, a demonic vision out of the past, still dressed in a somewhat soiled and shop-worn Otori Academy uniform, glaring with naked hatred at Caitlin Hutchins, who stood foursquare between him and his quarry now. She dropped her bag next to the one book she'd thrown and stood with her arms thrown wide, her black walking stick in her hand.
"I don't know who you think you are," she said in a voice so charged with emotion it was almost unrecognizable, "but you had better turn around and leave this campus right now."
"I have no quarrel with you," said Sionji. "My business here is with that wretch."
He pointed past Kate to Utrina, who still sat on the ground, trying in vain to catch her breath. "This matter is of no concern to you, girl. Move aside unless you wish to be hurt."
"Am I supposed to be intimidated?"
Kate replied, her voice dripping with scorn, her stutter completely washed away by her anger.
"You are supposed to cease your interference," replied Sionji with a sardonic smirk.
"And if I stand aside, what then? You'll kill her?"
"Probably," he said.
Caitlin spat, actually spat, not that it could do much to further soil his uniform.
"You filth," she snarled. "Look at yourself. A big, strong, healthy young man, taking out whatever frustrations he has with the universe by beating a girl so sick with flu she can barely walk. Such warrior spirit."
Her voice oozed contempt as she went on,
"My heart melts before the flame of your courage."
Sionji's eyes narrowed.
"My patience has limits, girl. You're about to exceed them."
He moved his hand to the grip of the sword that was thrust between his belt. Kate moved, kicking off her shoes one after the other, pushing them aside with one foot. She moved her feet a bit apart, flexing them gently in her socks as though trying to get a grip on the bricks of the walkway with her toes.
"If you draw that steel," she said evenly, "this becomes serious."
"It does indeed," agreed Sionji. "You would fight for this creature? Die for her?"
Kate shrugged, then stepped into a stance, raising her walking stick as though it were a bokuto, and said,
"Come and find out, if you think you can pass me." "Kate, no," thought Utina, but her voice wouldn't work. "No, run away, he'll kill you."
Sionji snarled, drawing his blade, and lunged. Utina flinched, squeezing her eyes shut, expecting the next thing she heard to be a terrible meaty sound, the next sensation to be the hot splash of Kate's blood on her face. Instead, she heard a sharp clack and felt nothing. Hesitantly, she opened her eyes. Kate stood rock still before her, the stick raised, Sionji's strike deflected. Without a word, the brown-haired girl advanced, making her own counter-strike, and the two began to trade blows in earnest. Utina again felt the need to gasp.
Caitlin was a kendoka?
No. The way she moved was not the firmly regimented style of the sporting form of kendo. It was too fluid, too intuitive, and the thrusts she made with that stick were not the formalized cuts of kendo. They were intended to strike her opponent, to hurt him. Not kendo. Kenjutsu. The two fenced back and forth for almost a minute, drawing a crowd that murmured and oohed but kept far back, until Sionji dropped his back foot and drove. Recognizing the thrust, Utina tried to cry a warning, but succeeded only in driving herself into another coughing fit that nearly put the lights out. When she had recovered her senses, she looked up, again expecting to see the worst. But Kate stood just as before, her face expressionless, but for the contemptuous narrowing of her eyes. A thin line of blood appeared below her left eye, beaded, and trickled down her face. Without removing her hands from her ersatz weapon, she put out her tongue and licked the bead away.
"So," she said.
Her hands moved, and with a sharp scrape, two-thirds of the walking stick spun away into the snow, revealing a glittering blade. The two opponents rejoined combat, this time the brilliant, ringing combat of steel against steel, and Utina watched with eyes wide. Not only was Kate trained in kenjutsu, she was well-trained, and talented as well. She was holding her own against one of the Otori Academy Student Council, the former captain of the kendo team, one of the most feared duelists in all Sephiro. No, more than holding her own, Sionji was attacking with a vicious ferocity, throwing all his energy into every attack, while Kate defended herself and counterstruck with a precise metering of her strength, matching him, but not wasting herself. He was actually starting to look a bit winded, but her face never changed.
It was like an ivory mask, cast in a slight frown of concentration. Only her eyes were alive, alight with fury and indignation. He struck at her right side, her weak side, she was left-handed, and tried to catch her counter-strike on his blade and twist her Zatoichi out of her hands. She thwarted him with a deft twist of her own wrists, not quite relieving him of his own blade, but throwing him well out of position. Then she seemed to coil into herself before suddenly exploding, a cry boiling up from deep within her to ring out across the quad.
Hyakken no Arashi!
And suddenly it was as though she had 100 pairs of arms, and every pair of them holding a blade. They danced around Sayanji like the wings of hummingbirds, making a very similar noise in the air, for 3 full seconds. And then she was 10 feet away from him, her blade tucked under her right elbow as though sheathed. Sayanji stood rooted to the spot, wobbling slightly on his feet. His uniform was in bloody tatters, stained by the flow from 100 wounds, all superficial but shocking in their total. He looked down at himself as though unable to believe what had happened to him, then tried to regroup himself for a charge. He raised his sword, and with a clear, bright ting, most of the blade broke off and clattered to the bricks. That seemed to snap him out of his shock. He blinked at it, snarled, and then, roaring with rage, leaped, driving the broken end of his blade at his enemy's heart. Caitlin flowed smoothly out of his path and whirled, her blade singing through the air, in a perfect decapitation cut. But she had reversed the blade, and its blunt back edge struck the back of Sayanji's neck with a reverberating whack instead of a smooth, hissing cut. He sprawled face first on the circular dedication stone in the center of the quad, the remains of his weapon flying from his hand to land in the snow with its grip pointed toward Alumni Gym, and lay quite still. Kate collected her Zatoichi's Saya, returned it, and stood looking down at her defeated opponent for a long moment, until he stirred, groaned, and began trying to get back up. Then she very delicately placed the ball of one stockinged foot between his shoulder blades and pushed him back down.
"You're not worth killing," she said icily. "Leave my school and never come back. Pray I never see you again."
Then she let him part way up, shoved him back down, for good measure, and turned her back, striding away with her head held high. Sayanji tried one more time to get up, gave up, and fell back into unconsciousness again. Kate put her shoes back on, went to where Utena's bag had flown, scooped her books back into it, and carried it to her.
"Can you walk?" she asked softly, kneeling down beside Utena. You should be in bed.
"You," Utena said, but couldn't get any more of it out.
Come on, said Kate.
She packed her physics book back in her own bag, slung them both over her shoulder, and then helped her roommate to her feet.
Lean on me. Don't worry. I can handle it.
"I'm not a damsel in distress," Utena protested weakly. "I'm not the one who needs rescuing."
"Shh," said Kate indulgently. "We all need to be rescued sometimes. Next time you can rescue me."
Utena decided she must have faded out for a bit after that. She didn't remember coming into Morgan Hall, or climbing the 6 half flights of stairs, or getting out of her clothes, or getting into bed. But here she was, out of them, and in it. A dull throbbing in both sides of her face had joined the catalogue of all her other symptoms. The sheet curtain at the side of her bed, which Kate had put up on her first morning here, and which neither had ever gotten around to taking down again, was drawn back and trapped behind the edge of the bureau, so she could see into the room. She seemed to be alone. Slowly, she worked herself to the edge of the bed, braced herself, and sat up.
"Where do you think you're going?" came Kate's voice from the doorway.
Utena started guiltily and looked to see her roommate scowling at her, pointing an imperious finger.
"Back into bed with you. Utna considered arguing, remembered what Kate had done to the last person to make her angry, and meekly obeyed. When she had, Caitlin drew up her desk chair next to the bed, put down the tea tray she'd been carrying, and began to take things from it and employ them. First, Utna was caused to swallow the rather foul-tasting green contents of a small plastic cup. Then a cool cloth was applied to her forehead. Then the top button of her flannel pajamas was undone, and her throat and upper chest smeared with a powerful-smelling gray paste. After that, tea. Utna smiled faintly.
"You'd think you were my mother," she said wryly.
Kate grinned. "Maybe I am today.
"Where did I get these pajamas?"
Utna wondered, raising her arm to look at the sleeve, which was patterned with a dark blue geometric print she found, in her present state, slightly mind-bending. She had several sets of her own, but they were all pink or light blue striped.
I borrowed them from Amanda, Kate replied. Mine wouldn't fit you, and yours are all in the hamper.
Amanda wears pajamas? Utna chuckled, which turned into a muted cough. Kate nodded.
Strange to think of, isn't it? To hear her talk, she'd rather sleep covered in nothing but the blood of her enemies.
Kate shook her head with an indulgent smile. As Lynn told me once, she sleeps with a rag doll, too. Of course, it's of her brother, so maybe we shouldn't go there.
Utna nodded. I knew a girl like that once.
The two sat in contemplative quiet for a few moments, drinking lemon tea. When they'd finished, Kate got up to clear away the tray, and Utna put out her hand and touched Kate's arm.
Kate, said Utna.
Hmm? Said Kate, all attention.
Thank you for helping me, Utna said. But you shouldn't have done it. That was Kyoichi Sayanji. He used to be the captain of the Kendo Club at my old school. He's crazy. Now that you've involved yourself, he'll hate you as much as he hates me. And you didn't kill him, so he'll be back.
She shook her head.
You shouldn't have done it.
Kate frowned.
So what then? She asked, a bit indignant. Should I just have let him kill you? Because he was going to?
Well, no, I'm glad you didn't do that, Utna admitted wryly. Then she sobered again and said,
But attacking him directly, why didn't you get the campus police or something?
Well, you know cops, said Kate. Never around when you need 'em. She shrugged.
What else could I do? Yell fire and hope he'd go away?
Utna thought about it for a moment, then sighed and coughed.
I guess not. I'm just trying to warn you. You've made a dangerous enemy.
Kate shook her head. No, she replied with a slight glitter in her eyes.
He has. I don't look for trouble, Utna. But if it finds me, I'm prepared for it. Don't worry about me.
Utna smiled, shook her head a bit indulgently.
You're really something, she said. All this time you've been carrying a sword around and I never noticed it. Is that what you've been doing every day from 4 to 6?
Kate nodded.
I have to keep my edge sharp, she said. Dad might decide to test me any time I'm home. Of course. Your father's some kind of modern-day samurai. You told me that months ago, and I never made the connection.
Utna sighed self-mockingly, coughed, and added wryly, And I used to call myself a duelist. Kate might have asked her to elaborate on that, but just then there was a knock at the door, which Kate had left ajar, and Devlin Carter put his head in.
Hello? All right. Everybody decent?
Come in, Devlin, said Kate, decorously drawing the top sheet up to Utina's throat. Devlin did as he was bade, trotting into the room. At Utina's desk, he paused, reached into one of the pockets of his voluminous trench coat, and pulled out a bud vase. This he placed on the desk. Then he rummaged in another inside pocket for a moment, then another, with a concentrated frown on his face. He turned sheepishly to the girls, wearing a look of intense self-reproach, then brightened and made a curious gesture with his hands. A couple of white roses seemed to pop out of nowhere into his right hand, and, smiling contentedly to himself, he arranged these in the vase before coming the rest of the way to the sick girl's bedside. Utina laughed, coughed, and thanked him for the flowers and the performance.
"Just my little way of helping," he said. "I'm not very strong, but I'm dexterous."
He tisked thoughtfully.
"You're a sight, love. But I hear the other fellow came out of it much the worse. Eh, what?"
Utina nodded.
"Thanks to Kate."
"That's our Kate," said Devlin proudly. "Writer of wrongs, protector of the innocent, avenger of justice. Why, she's a regular knight-errant, prince on a white horse. What?"
Kate blushed a little.
"Cut it out, Devlin," she said with a shy smile.
"Righto," said Devlin. "Anyway, I only wanted to come and express my relief, tell you to get well soon, and all that sort of bump. I won't hang about bothering you while you're trying to recuperate."
He tipped his hat to them both and departed, whistling.
Devlin gets a little odder each term, Kate observed with a smile.
Utina said nothing. She was looking very thoughtful and rather troubled. Finally, she sat fully upright and said,
"Caitlin, I have to tell you something."
"Not now," Kate said, pushing her back down by the shoulders and tucking her back in. "Rest.
We can talk all you want, once you're well again."
Utina would have protested, and indeed tried to, but she was suddenly feeling tremendously tired, and the more she tried to organize her thoughts to relate them to Kate, the more scattered they became, until finally the room and the face of her roommate faded away into a painless darkness. Kate watched her sleep, listening with satisfaction to the easing of the awful wheeze in her chest, and then went to her own desk to get started on a report she had to do. For the rest of the afternoon and evening, she kept one ear tuned, but Utina slept peacefully through until the following morning. When she woke, she wasn't well. Such a nasty flu doesn't pass off completely in 14 hours of sleep, but she felt much better, well enough to get out of bed, put on her dressing gown, and shuffle down to the bathroom for a shower. While brushing her teeth, she surveyed the purpling bruises on her face and throat in the mirror and sighed ruefully. It turned into a cough, but didn't rack her whole body the way it had yesterday. She began to entertain thoughts of possibly feeling well some day. When she got back to 412, Azalin was there, chattering cheerfully about something or other while Kate rummaged around preparing another pot of tea on her spirit lamp. The Dantrovian girl had brought a bag of muffins from the dining room for breakfast, and hearing the door open, she whirled.
"Utina!"
she cried, and covered the distance between them in two great bounds to wrap the taller girl in her arms and spin her almost completely around.
"You're all right!"
"Not yet," Utina allowed, disentangling herself as gently as possible. "But I'm mending."
"I was worried," Azalin said with an odd combination of solicitude and petulance. "We all were. Going to class, sick as you were, and then that awful man. Devlin told the rest of us about it at dinner, but he said you were so sick we shouldn't come up. Phil, look at your face! That brute! If I had him right here right now, I'd give him such a smack!"
She drove one small fist into the opposite palm, then winced and shook her hand.
"Azalin, don't bother Utina," said Kate with mild admonishment. "She's not well yet. She still needs rest and quiet.
"Right," said Azalin, saluting with a broad grin. "You take good care of her, Katie. And don't worry about that guy. If he comes around again, Amanda says she'll gut him."
comes around again.
Isn't he in jail?
Nope. Hadn't you heard? He disappeared. By the time the campus police got to the quad after you carried Utena up here, he was gone. Nothing left of him but all that blood on the dedication stone and what was left of his sword. Don't worry, though, she repeated. We're all on the lookout. If he shows his face around here again, I wouldn't like to bet on how long he'll last.
Utena gave Kate a troubled look. Kate replied with a little half-shrug, then ushered Azalin out with appropriate thanks for the watchful sentiment and the muffins. Utena collected a cup of tea, a muffin, and another dose of the nasty-tasting green stuff, then suffered herself to be arranged in bed and anointed with the strong-smelling gray stuff again.
Miss Montaigne was here yesterday, Kate said as she applied the gray gunk. After you passed out the first time. She wanted to know who the guy was who attacked you, and whether you needed the school doctor. She'll probably be back to ask you about him today.
I won't tell her the whole truth, said Utena. I can't.
Kate nodded.
Just as you like it, she said, briskly arranging the covers around her charge and providing her with a fresh compress for her head.
Before applying it, Kate touched the inside of her wrist to Utena's forehead.
You feel cooler today.
I wasn't lying to Azalin. I feel better. Not well, but better.
Kate gave an absent sort of nod and went back to her desk, rummaging around a bit. Then she came back to the bedside, sat down in her chair with her feet on the edge of a bureau drawer, and propped her sheet music notebook up on her knees.
"Aren't you going to class?" asked Utena after a few minutes.
"No," Kate replied. "Someone has to look after you."
"But bad enough I'm not going to class. We can't both flunk out."
"We're not going to flunk out," Kate said. "I talked to all of our teachers yesterday. We'll have to take our exams home with us for winter break, but we'll do all right."
"Home?"
Kate nodded.
The dorms close over Christmas. Everybody has to go home."
Utena snorted, which turned into a cough.
"I don't have a home," she said when she was done coughing.
"Well, then you can come to mine," said Kate.
Dad won't mind. He loves meeting my friends. We always do something nice for dinner the first night I'm back, too."
"You'd take me to your home for the whole holiday break, just like that?"
"But you..."
Utena's blacker moods sometimes led her to exaggerate, and so it was that she went on softly,
"You barely know me."
"Don't be ridiculous, Kate said reproachfully.
"I barely know your history," she went on didactically.
But I certainly know you, by now. I know that you're honest and brave and sad, and that you are determined to bear your sorrows alone, and almost strong enough to do it."
She looked her roommate square in the eye for a second, then looked away.
"I'm sorry, I've said too much. It's none of my business."
"No," said Utena.
She worked her right hand out from under the covers to touch Kate's arm.
"You made it your business a long time ago, but I haven't... I'm the one who ought to be sorry. I'm feeling well enough to tell the story now. Will you hear it?"
Kate paused, stuck her pencil into the spiral binding of her notebook, and put the notebook aside.
"Of course," she said simply.
So... slowly, painfully, and sometimes haltingly, Utena told her story. It was a long one, complex and sometimes confusing, but Kate stayed with her, nodding and making encouraging sounds where appropriate. The basic story, of love, unexpected and unlooked for, springing up, growing, flourishing, and then being wrenched cruelly apart by fate, was a familiar one. But the details and circumstances were so strange that Kate had to devote all her attention to the listening. She wished she could take notes, but that would have been rather crass, so instead she concentrated as hard as she could on committing it all to memory. There were parts that made Utina laugh to retell, and Kate laughed to hear. There were others that Utina could barely bring herself to tell at all, and Kate listened to those with solemn gravity, and, more than once, her own tears. By the end, all Kate could think of was a poem of which her father was darkly fond, and as Utina finished the tale and sat huddled, hugging her knees to her chest and crying, Kate murmured softly, "Things fall apart. The center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood-dimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned." Falling silent, she put her hand on Utina's shoulder and sat quiet, letting her comforting touch and her own silent tears speak for her. The silence stretched, broken only by Utina's painful-sounding combination of sobbing and coughing, for several minutes. Then Utina seemed to shake herself. She raised her head, and with a great, shuddering sigh, she purged the fit of despair from her system, then sat up straight, wiping at her eyes. "I've been doing too much of that lately," she said firmly. A smile touched the corners of her mouth and eyes as she chuckled and added, "Emmemia wouldn't like it. It would worry her sick. She hates to see anyone upset, especially me. I suppose you've known from the beginning." Caitlin nodded. Known that something was wrong, but not understood what, she said. Now I understand. "Will you keep my secrets, now that I've told them to you?" "Of course," said Kate. "They aren't mine to tell. "I'm sorry I've been such a jerk all this time," Utina said. "I guess you were right. I've been trying to bear up, like I did the time I first met my prince." She looked at the small scar on her finger where the ring had been torn away. "But there's no need to bear it all alone this time." Kate smiled. "I'm glad you feel that way." She held out a hand. Utina smiled back. "I'm glad I can," she said, and clasped the offered hand, palm to palm, an arm wrestler's grip. They held that tableau for a moment. Then Utina looked around the room and said, "Now, what are the chances that we can get some sort of a hot plate or something in here for me to cook on? I can't get the hang of that chemistry burner you use to heat tea. I feel like I'm going to blow the place up with it. And it's too hot to make anything else with, either." Kate's face adopted a look of exaggerated thoughtfulness as she completely ignored the fact that they'd had this conversation before, always come to the same conclusion, and always failed to get around to doing anything about it afterward.
I don't know, she said. Cooking in the dorms is against the school rules.
Utina gave her an exasperated look. "And carrying a sword around campus isn't? And what about your piano? Do you want to keep eating the meal plan?" Kate grinned. "Your logic has overwhelmed me. While we're home for break, we'll go shopping."